This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human animal connection.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Human Animal Connection. I am your host, Michael Overly, and I'm here with the amazing Jeannie Joseph. Jeannie, I can't wait to talk about today's silence.
Yeah. Yeah, today we're talking about entering the language of silence. So that's a kind of different way of thinking about silence. I think people think about silence as nothing, but silence is the absence of thinking. That's how we're defining silence. So silence is a very profound experience. And in the human animal connection, we feel that silence is where you can hear all the answers to questions you have, things you can't logically figure out with your mind, but you need understanding about. If you go into the silence, that's where you can hear an answer that's beyond maybe what your mind would have thought of. And that's the way animals communicate. They communicate in this realm. And so we teach our students who are interested in learning animal communication how to enter the language of silence.
That's fantastic. So Zen Buddhism, right? Meditation, entering this still quiet place.
Yeah.
The Cherokee people have a word, tiwai, and it means the stillness inside. And that's where they go for wisdom, right? Oh my God. I love this subject because I teach meditation to men to help them with their stuff.
Yeah.
And we're not used to being silent and quiet and still.
It's such a beautiful thing. And every tradition, every religious tradition talks about that, the peace within, the stillness within, or they have different names for it, but it's all the same. And so I think that's a really good indication that it's real, that, you know, people from every culture have been doing it for thousands of years, like, duh. So yeah, it's, you know, for some people, it's all new, the idea that silence could be profound, that in silence you could hear. And when I say hear, I don't just mean with the ears. So hearing with the whole being, the hearing with your heart, hearing with your gut, healing with your feet. You know, the Native Americans talk about, you know, walking barefoot on the earth to hear. So hearing not just the way we think of hearing as words in the ears, but hearing with your whole essence. And that's what we're talking about today.
God, I love it. I love it. So let's get out of the silence for a minute. And
yeah.
Talk about words. You say that words have power, right?
Yeah. We really believe, and a lot of people have, we're not the only ones who believe this, that words have power, meaning that every word has energy. So if I say good, that has energy to it. If I say ugly, that has energy to it. And, you know, all of these, every time we use a word, we're invoking energy. So when we say words have power, we mean that they have the power to invoke an experience, an emotion, an energy, a thought process. So if I say good, you know, that invokes a sensation in you, a feeling. You know, I say, Michael, you are so good. Right? That creates an experience for you. And if I say, Mike, tell me something that awful I could say to you, and I just want to say it so you can tell me how it feels. What would be an awful thing? Michael, you are what?
Obnoxious.
Michael, you are obnoxious. No, you're not. But just to use that as an example, those two things feel very different, right? They land differently in your nervous system. They land differently in your body and your mind and your heart and your feelings. And so to remember that words have power allows us to choose words more carefully. Meaning, what energy do we want to be putting out in the world? What energy do we want to be feeling? So when I told you were obnoxious, which of course I didn't believe, it was just a game, but it felt differently to me than it felt when I said to you, Michael, you are good. It was just so sweet when I said, Michael, you are good. And it didn't feel sweet when I said, Michael, you're obnoxious. I know maybe that's something from your history that maybe people told you that or something, you know. And so it has resonance with you. It doesn't land neutrally. It gets stuck. You know, it's just like, yuck, you know. And so we really want students in the human animal connection to pay attention to the words they're using between them and themselves, them and humans, and then them and their animals, because we really believe that animals can really feel the difference between saying, you know, Sophia, you are so good, and Sophia, you're a bad dog. You know, she can feel the difference between those two things. Maybe she doesn't literally understand the literal meaning of the word, but she can feel the difference in my energy or my mood when I'm feeling the loving feelings of good doggy versus feeling, you know, critical, judgmental energy, which nobody likes, doesn't feel good to anybody. And so a lot of people think that they can just say anything in front of their dog, like talk about their dog's, you know, suffering or their past trauma. And I always say to people, okay, let's, you know, I get it, but let's not talk about that anymore, because I can see that it's affecting the dog. And so we really encourage people to choose their words carefully. It doesn't mean lie or pretend, but it means we're going to talk about the trauma. Let's just talk about it simply and let's move on, because we want to help the dog not invoke that energy, that history of trauma. So that's a big leap for a lot of people when I say to them, please don't talk about that anymore in front of the dog. It's hurting their feelings. And they look at me like I'm a nut at first, but then they come to understand that it's true. They can see, you can watch. And we're trained when we're students in the trust technique, we're trained as the owner is talking about the bad things the dog is doing. We watch the animal, not the person. And we see how those words and how those thought forms and how that energy is affecting the animal. And when we invite the human to change their language and their thought forms and their energy, things change.
Even now, all the work I've done with Indigo, we could be walking down the street and I see a car coming, and because I live kind of out towards the country, so I don't have curbs, right? And I see a car coming, and he's like starting to cross over the line onto the shoulder where we're walking. I start to get nervous energetically. Yeah. She picks up on that and may even lunge at the vehicle.
Right. Right. Because she thinks,
like, oh, scary.
Scary, bad thing. Got to go lunge at it. Right.
Yeah. And then I have to remember, oh, that was me. Right.
That's great.
I precipitated that whole event. I'm like, exactly. Okay, next time I'm just going to step off a little further and not worry about it.
Right. Step into the safety zone. Right. Away from what is, you know, going to be a dangerous situation and towards what's safe. So, yeah, they're paying attention to us and our energy. And sometimes they're trying to protect us. And sometimes they just get into their, you know, I got to fight this thing, this bad thing coming. I got to get into my lunge energy and my towards in the wrong way. A healthy animal moves towards what's good and away from what's bad. But when they're triggered, they will do the opposite. They will move towards what's dangerous. And that's, you know, can result in some very bad things happening. So, yeah. So, you know, and the thing about words, I love words. Obviously, I'm a writer, so I'm not anti-word. I don't want to make it sound like I'm against words. I love words. But I'm very much about conscious use of words. So it's important, because words can lie or words can tell the truth. That just like a power that, you know, could go either direction. So I can say, I love you, or I could say, I love you, you know, and it's the same words, but they have, you know, very different meanings. They land differently to the person receiving them, right? Could you feel the difference between those two? Yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about human nature, is that we are part of our culture. You know, lying is baked into our culture. We're lied to all the time by people in power and politicians and bosses and everything else. And, you know, these things go on, and in partners, you know, and children lie to parents and parents lie to children. And, you know, we lie to the dog, I'll be right back. Well, we're not going to be right back. You know, it's important to really recognize that words do have power and to make the best choices that we can.
I love that. I'm still guilty of saying I'll be right back.
Yeah. 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 Well, you know, that's fine if you are, you know, if you're just going to take the trash, but, you know, I say to Sophia, I'll be back. I don't say right back. I'd say I'll be back, because that's true. I will be back. So, they really come to know, you know, because when we're lying, it's like if you're taking a lie detector test and you lie and the needles go crazy, you know, because you just told a lie. Well, they have a kind of lie detector test innately in them that they can feel the energy, and they can feel what I call a congruent message, which means everything matches, your thoughts, your words, and your action. That's a congruent when they're all the same. But when your words say one thing and your actions say another, or your words say one thing and your emotions say another, that's an incongruent message, which the animals pick up on, and it's a disturbance for them. It messes with their brain. It short circuits their trust in you, because then you become not trustworthy. It's like if you tease a dog all the time, they're not going to trust you, you know? So these are just some things that help us really understand how to have more trust and more connection with the animals who share our lives.
So tell me about Sophie. What did Sophie tell you about her life?
So this is a client I've been working with, and she is a wonderful person, adopted a dog that was really probably from a puppy mill and has extreme trauma. This is not a dog that can, most dogs, it's like, you want to go out? Yeah, I want to go out. Nope, she's not going out. She is, not able. I mean, she has to potty inside. She's really, really scared. She just mostly lays in her bed. She will play when her person is asleep. She'll prance around. So we know it's not physical. We know she's not, it's not in there. I think there have been some injuries, but she has a very small life in the sense that she, she eats. And so we've been working together and great progress. She will now go out, which is exciting. But still she's, if someone comes to the house, she's going to hide and not just hide for an hour. She'll hide for a couple of days. You know what I mean? So she really has a very sensitive system. But what's interesting about her is since I can communicate with her is that she has a very profound inner life. She's almost like a monk in a monastery. She has this very rich inner life, and it's very tempting for her person to think, oh, there's something wrong. She's not a normal dog. She doesn't do normal dog things. She's not excited about normal dog things. And when we ask Sophie about her life, she says, I am fine. There is nothing wrong with me. I am not broken. And it's an important lesson for her human. This is something that her human is working through in terms of her own karma, is to not feel like a burden to others, not feel that she's broken. These are all her themes. So she, in a way, has the perfect dog, because this dog is helping her to see that we may have opinions or judgments about how a normal dog should behave. And we do want to expand Sophie's life. We are working to expand it, but it has to be from the place of not that Sophie's broken. And yes, she's been traumatized. Yes, we know that. But what we need to know is her version of her life is that she's peaceful and good. And every time we ask her, she basically gives us the same message, that she's happy, she's content, and there's nothing wrong. And so that perspective, when we work with her, is what allows her to change. That is what has allowed. Now we can, for the first time, we can put a harness on her, a collar on her, which we couldn't do before. We can attach a leash. She can't yet walk on a leash, but we can get her up. We can get her out of the bed and walk maybe 3 or 4 feet, get a treat. And, these are very small pieces of progress, and not too many people would be willing to have a dog that has this kind of, these kinds of issues. But this is a wonderful retired woman, and she recognizes the spiritual contract between the two of them. And she recognizes what it's like when she, instead of viewing Sophie as wounded or broken or needing fixing, that when she approaches Sophie from the point of view of, you are beautiful, you are perfect, you are happy, which is what Sophie has communicated to us, then everything changes for her in her own life. And so there are many ways in which dogs have, or other animals too, dogs, cats, horses, animals that share your life. Not always, but sometimes they come in with these really deep soul contracts where they are reflecting issues that we are also working on. And when we understand that, we recognize that this is a very deep partnership. This is not just an owner and a pet. These are two souls that have a soul agreement, that have come to share and learn and grow together. And that is very profound.
That's amazing. We want to be the savior, right? We want to fix, we want to help. And oftentimes it's because of our own issues, traumas, things we've experienced, and we don't have that respect for the other. So I'm really glad we touched on that. That's amazing.
Yeah. It isn't always the case, but you'd be surprised how many cases, how many stories of people where I find out when, there's some very problematic issues, and I say, well, is this at all relevant in your own life? Well, yeah, it is. Okay. So then as the human begins to heal, it helps, gives the dog more room to heal, the horse more room to heal, the cat more room to heal. So this is a profound understanding. It doesn't mean that every problem has a correspondence in the animal, but when we find these kind of challenging cases, we often find that that's the case.
You said in silence, all answers can be heard. What do you mean by that?
So that means that when we think, and thinking is a wonderful thing. I mean, my mother had dementia, so believe me, the executive brain, the thinking brain, logical brain, so important. But it's also important to allow other parts of our knowingness to have their time to be heard. And when we're thinking can take us through certain things. Like if we're trying to balance our checkbook, thinking is our best friend. But there are other situations where thinking can't solve the problem. Like Einstein said, the same mind that created the problem can't see the solution. So sometimes we need to be in our receiving brain, not our thinking, thought generating brain, but our receiving brain, you know, which sometimes people call that your intuition or your gut sense, or, you know, the part of you that just knows. And sometimes what I find with animals is they will often give me an answer that I couldn't think my way through, you know, some behavioral problem, and they give me an explanation or an answer or a suggestion that's just like, wow, I wouldn't have thought of that. You know, the animal knows in a way that our logical minds don't always know, which is why we can't think our way out of some of these issues with our animals, you know, some behavior issue. We don't understand it. It's not logical. It doesn't make sense, but it makes sense in a sensory way. There's some sensation where it does make sense. And in the silence, we're more likely to be able to receive or hear that answer. And so we want to cultivate a practice of silence. As you mentioned, many of these meditation systems cultivate the practice of silence, not thought generation, but silence. And what I like to remind people is that this is not a state that most of us can maintain for very long. And the goal is not to do it in a continuous way, like I, you know, trying to do it for an hour, that'd be insane for me. But I do it periodically during the day. I'll take a moment where I just consciously say, okay, not going to think, just going to go into the silence. Maybe I'm with my dog and petting her and reconnect in that way of silence. And it's so loving and so peaceful and so delicious. It's like, why would I want to do anything else? I know, can't do it all day long, but for those little doses of it. So I think that, you know, the old model of meditation, you know, the people, and I'm sure that people get tremendous value out of sitting for 45 minutes or an hour, not saying anything against it. But most of us can't do that. And we don't need to do that. What we need to do is occasionally, periodically, make it more a part of our daily life where just even as you're washing the dishes, just go into the silence for a while, go into the peace and just enjoy that for 3 minutes and you'll feel rejuvenated.
Yeah, that's a huge point. People think they have to go from 0 to 100. Right. Oh, I have to sit on this pillow and stare at this candle for an hour.
Yeah.
Well, that's just unobtainable.
It is. And then it's frustrating because then you feel like, oh, I'm no good at this. I can't do it. I guess I'll quit, you know? And so we want to say, you know, like when I work with the soldiers, can we have 3 seconds of peace? That's a lot, right? 3 seconds, no thinking. Okay, let's try 5 seconds, you know, let's get to 17 seconds. That's 30 seconds. We're done, you know, because they can see how that is really helpful. And then it creates an appetite for it. You know, then you have the desire for it. But when you try to say, I'm going to sit for an hour, I can't do that without thinking. I'm going to go wander around in my thought processes. So it's just a different way of looking at meditation. So for me, I want people to be able to meditate with their eyes open. I want them to be able to meditate while they're doing the dishes, while they're petting their dog, not while they're driving their car, but certainly walking. Yeah, right. Exactly. Walking your dog like you do with your clients, you know, that walking the dog is not just about pottying. Of course, it's about pottying, but it's also about getting peaceful with your dog, meditating. You know, your dog is sniffing, you can sniff too. Not that you have to be down on all fours, but you can metaphorically smell the roses. Really look at that tree. Really look at that, you know, what is that dirt like that he's sniffing or she's sniffing right now? You know, just look at it. And just in that way, you can be present with the experience so that it's something that you share together.
Absolutely. But as you mentioned before, start small.
Right.
So Frank Kinslow, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him or not. He's an energy guy. He and both Eckhart Tolle talk about just finding the space between words, that little gap.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe lengthening that gap a tiny bit. And that's all you have to do to start. You don't have to do this, you know, join a monastery or a yoga studio or whatever. You can just do this in these tiny moments.
Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and take a little break and then we'll come back and finish.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, and we are back, ladies and gentlemen. We were talking about silence and how we get there, right? So, Jeannie, I had mentioned Eckhart Tolle before, but there's another Eckhart that I wanted to ask you about. That's Meister Eckhart.
Yes.
And what he says about silence.
Yeah, I'm going to read it because I think it's really a good one. He says, "There's a huge silence inside each of us that beckons us into itself. And the recovery of our own silence can begin to teach us the language of heaven." Wow.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that beautiful?
I think it's my next tattoo. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's so much in that, you know, that the idea that silence is huge, that it beckons us, that it has a force, you know what I mean? It has intention, like it welcomes us, it wishes for us to come and commune. I mean, it's like such an interesting concept. And the notion of recovery of your own silence is like, wow, you know, like we have that in us. It's not something that we have to achieve, like in the sense of go take some course and get it. It's something that we just have to remember. And just the deliciousness of it, that it can begin to teach us the language of heaven. It is so delicious. There are a few things as wonderful as silence. And again, like we were saying, you know, maybe just 10 seconds of silence, maybe just a minute of silence, or a couple minutes of silence. I go out and sit with the birds in the morning and it's just for a couple minutes. And, you know, in this case, the silence has the birds in it, you know, but it's silence between my ears. It's the silence of not thinking. So I can be hearing in silence. This is spiritual silence. It's not the absence of sound, of which, by the way, interestingly enough, scientists have found that there's almost no silence anywhere on the earth. There's always some kind of noise. So, you know, it's really something that to cultivate, to establish a practice of silence. And those people who are interested in communicating with animals, you know, people, when they ask me quickly, like in a class, what's the first step? Well, the first step is cultivating silence so that you can not be thinking about what the animal is saying, but be able to receive. So that's the practice. And if those of you who want to develop your animal communication skills, is to really practice and strengthen your silence, because the more you practice it, the stronger it gets and it becomes more reliable. You can go to it, get there more quickly, and you can stay in it longer. It's like a muscle, you know, the more you use it, the better it gets.
Well, in a creative sense as well, right? Mm-hmm. So the writer Kurt Vonnegut had a sign above his desk. You know what it said?
What?
Stop thinking.
Stop thinking. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great. I mean, every writer needs that, because sometimes, you know, you can't think your way out of a writing step. You know, what's next? You have to let go in a very deep way. But what's interesting is that from a neurological linguistic programming point of view, stop thinking. What stop does is it puts, the brain doesn't make a picture for stop, but it makes a picture for thinking. And so when you say stop thinking, you're actually still putting in the thought of thinking. Because in order to stop thinking, you have to think about the thought of stopping thinking, and thinking about thinking, and thinking about stopping thinking. And it goes, you know, so it, what we would offer up to the stuff, I mean, I love that he said that because it's very powerful, but what we would offer up is be silent, be peaceful. And that is, the brain goes, oh, okay. It's like if you say to a child, don't spill the milk, what's the next thing that's going to happen is that you've just made a picture. You've just put the image. You've just, you know, imprinted the energy of spilling the milk. The next thing that happens is they go like this, not intentionally, but the milk spills, because you just created, like you said, with your dog, when the car was coming, you put that energy, oh, a car, I better move, you know, and that all creates that whole dynamic. So instead of stop doing something, start doing the other thing. So instead of stop thinking, we would offer up, get peaceful, get silent.
I like that.
Yeah.
So how do you communicate without words, beyond words?
So that's the language of silence, is that we go into the silence and instead of saying, hey, Michael, how are you? Which is a thinking process. You know, I just maybe might look at you and just see if I can sense, how are you? You know, so I'm just, without even putting the words out, I'm going to feel into how you are in this moment. And that creates a connection, because when I'm feeling my energy into you, you can feel me putting my presence on you, my awareness of you, without having a concept about how you are, just really being open to just seeing, feeling, sensing how you are. And that way we go beyond the realm of words. And again, words are wonderful, very powerful, not against words. It's just that we want to have more ways to communicate. We want to expand our repertoire, especially if we're working with animals who may or may not be responding to words. Some animals absolutely will communicate to me in full sentences, just like you and I are talking right now. Other animals, they want a different doorway. They want me to come in through perception or through feeling or through energy or something that's beyond words. And then often they'll get the hang of it and they'll start using the words. But I've had many cats that just, they just want me to come in differently. They want me to come in through the silence and then they'll begin to talk.
I like that. Yeah. Creating that space, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So,
and you know, one of the things I'd like to invite people to just consider is, what would your life be like if you could communicate with your animal, you know, more than, you know, certainly if you're sharing your life with an animal, you have many ways that you communicate. You're using words, which are fine, maybe some gestures. When you think about, oh, I think we're going to go for a walk, how many of you can say that your dog, before you even get out of the chair, before you even put your hand on the leash, they've got that idea that you're going to go on that walk? And imagine if you could expand that realm of being able to communicate in silent ways and in powerful energetic ways. Do you think, is that something you'd like to do, Michael?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I think on some level, people, they may notice this from time to time, but they can't grasp it.
Right. It's
or
accidental.
They'll pick up on something and they're like, oh, but then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So what we're talking about is maybe making it more deliberate or more conscious or more reliable, so that, you know, that, I mean, like I had a situation, I had a wonderful cat rescued New York City in the winter. And I was in the movie business at the time, so I did not have time for anything except the movie business. So, but I had been having these dreams that I was going to get a cat. And finally I said, if I'm going to get a cat, I'm not going to do anything about it. The cat will find me, you know, and I just kind of forgot about it. And one night I lived on the ground floor apartment and I had been broken in. I lived alone. I'd been broken into before, you know. So one night I hear this terrible noise, sounded like someone trying to break in my window. And so I scream at this noise and I hear back, meow. This tiny little meow. I don't know if I told you the story before, but I'll tell you again. So I said to myself, well, I'm just going to go give him some milk. I'm just going to go open the door, put some milk out, and that's it. I'm going back to bed. It was the middle of the night. So go out, bring some milk. He walks by the milk, walks into my open apartment door and settles in. He's like, this is my house now. This little orange tabby, you know, and this is the middle of the winter. I mean, it was like 30 degrees out there, you know, this little thing. And I had nothing. I had no litter box. I had no cat food. You know, it's like he decided he was my cat, you know, so we had this just wonderful connection. He did so much to open my understanding of communicating with animals. And went, you know, 16 years later, when it was time for him to pass and the vet had said, well, maybe, you know, we should do euthanasia. And I'm not against euthanasia for animals that need it, but I was really, was my first time experiencing that. And I just didn't want to get it wrong. So I said to Wolfie, I said, what do you want me to do? He said, I want to go on my own. I want to go at home. And he told me the day he was going to go, he said, I'm going to go between 3 and 5 in the morning. So he told me the day, the time, and where. And that really helped me, because I knew what he wanted, you know, and every animal's different what they want, but that's what he wanted. And he went at 3:30 in the morning that day, you know, and I was with him holding him. And that was what we needed, you know, to have our last moments together, you know. So what I'm trying to say is that communication can be very literal, very, you know, language oriented, but it didn't start that way. I had to learn, you know, how to communicate and to be in silence with him. And so he was my, one of my first instructors. Yeah.
Oh, God, they're amazing, aren't they? If they're just willing to listen.
Yeah. Yeah, they really are. And in our next episode, we're going to be talking about how animals really are our partners in healing, you know, how they help us heal, that it's not just, like you said, we're not just like going in and healing them, you know, it's like it's mutual. There's healing that goes in both directions. And to really recognize that, we can help animals find their true purpose, and we can also understand our unique purpose in the world. So that'll be our next episode.
Yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait. Thank you, Jeannie.
Yeah, thank you, Michael.
All right. Well, folks, we will see you soon.
Yeah, we'll say aloha for now.
Aloha.
Thank you for tuning into the Human Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services. You can reach Michael Overley, author of Let Your Dog Lead, Musings on How to Create an Exceptional Life, on his website at dogsandmen.com or email michael@dogsandmen.com.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.